Masango on 702.
For the curious, streaming countrywide on the 702 app.
Somebody says, Aubrey, you're hosting the men's conference tonight. Yeah, I am. I am. Not the one that happens on the 14th of February. Yeah, for all you cheapskates that don't want to be part of the whole culture of Valentine's Day. That's what I discovered just recently, that there's no such thing as men's conference. Or you thought it was a real thing. I'm not lying to you. I thought it was a thing. I've just discovered that, no, it was just a bunch of cheapskates that don't want to be part of the Valentine's Day thing. And they decided they were going to call it the man's conference. So indeed, we're going to be talking about a lot of things that involve men and their role in society. And of course, how they interpret and experience some of the things that are taking place. And in studio this evening is Shando Taron. He's attorney and matrimonial mediator on father's custody rights. And he's here with me in studio. Shando, thank you very much for coming back, my brother. I appreciate it. It's a conversation that's been going on for some time, and you've probably heard that there are a couple of men who are on hunger strike at the moment because they feel that the law is not fair on them in as far as custody of their children post-divorce.
Well, Aubrey, thank you. It's good to be back. And just first, before I get to that, I think 14th of February, I think, is better suited as Singles Awareness Day for those who don't have dates and who don't have Valentine. That's what my brother calls it, Singles Awareness Day.
So was he at the men's conference?
I don't know where he was, but he wasn't on a date.
Sure.
So, Aubrey, the bottom line is, it is gaining traction worldwide, this sort of men's movement that men are fed up with the way they're being treated. It's not just in our country with a hunger strike. There's that Fathers for Justice, which is in this country as well, but they made headlines a couple of years ago where they dressed up in Superman suits and Batman suits and Spider-Man suits and tied themselves to the British Houses of Parliament and also to the Big Ben and the London Bridge. To state that why are fathers being treated so unequally, and in this country it's the same thing. We in the Children's Act says in most cases the act is supposed to keep families united as far as possible and not break up families and give people equal access rights. And I took a photograph here of what it says here, what the Children's Act is supposed to do. The best interest of the child must be paramount importance in all matters. A child has a right to participate, and it should try and keep families intact as far as possible. And there it also talks about post-divorce families.
Yeah.
And the Children's Act says in a lot of cases it states that, or in the protection orders, or not protection orders, in the parenting plan, which is the document that sort of regulates the care and contact post-divorce, that each parent has full parental rights and responsibilities. If you, Aubrey, have full parental rights and I have full parental rights, well, it's not a big leap to say that we have equal parental rights then. But how do the courts interpret this equal parental rights? Well, while we were married, I could see my children every day. Now that we're not married and I have so-called full or equal rights, in a two-week cycle, I maybe get to see them two nights a week, maybe. Now, in my book, that's not equal. Now, I take that, and the Constitution says you cannot discriminate based on gender. But how come a woman's equal, in this case, is out of 14 days, she has the children for 12 days, and you have them for two?
You and I, in a past conversation, and I'd like for you to just revisit that, because I'm sure that there are listeners who perhaps didn't hear your response to that. But the legal regime as it stands at the moment comes from a time when there was an understanding that the mother of children is best suited to look after children because she has, I suppose, the ability to nurture children at a particular stage of their life. And the understanding was that the reason why the preference for custody given to mothers is precisely because of that, generally, because children are young, they are in need of more nurturing at that time, which is a role that is traditionally played by mom. And that's why the law would be a lot more lenient in the provision of the custody to the mother because of that sort of biological imperative. Talk to me about that.
Yes, that's sort of the institutional memory, I think, that the court is saddled with. And it's the court is very conservative in their thinking and conservative and slow to change. And so they should be. They're sort of the backstop, and they shouldn't, on a whim, change quickly. It should take a lot of thought. But I think in this case, they've actually not kept up at all with how society has changed. The court's thinking, the institutional memory, is still pretty much stuck in a time when the mother stayed at home and was the only nurturer and the only carer for the children, or one of the main carers, and the father went out and earned the bacon. Aubrey, I don't know how many families you know of today that both parents are not working. It's the exception if the family has enough money that the mother can stay at home and look after the children. And if they have enough money for the mother to stay home and look after the children, she generally is outsourcing that to an au pair already, or a bunch of nannies. These days, your children are not raised by you. They're raised by a creche, by a gogo, or a nanny, or a domestic, but generally not by the mother. The mother has to go. Things have gotten so expensive. I mean, just look at private school fees. Just look at the cost of living. Everybody but the politician seems to be struggling to put food on the table.
Yep.
We both parents have to go out and work. Yet, the maternal preference and the tender years principle, even though there are enough cases to say...
What is it called? The tender
years principle okay. And the maternal preference. They sort of go hand in hand. It's pretty much the same thing. If a child is of tender years, it needs its mother. Why? Now, let's think about that. Well, the old argument is used, well, the mother needs to breastfeed the child, the mother needs to look after the child. Well, I can shoot that out of the window completely. Firstly, the mother is not the one looking after the child anymore. So let's kill that. The mother's out there working 9 to 5 like everybody else. Two, this whole breastfeeding myth, most children today are raised on formula. And I can buy as good a formula as you as a father. If I have more money, I can probably buy better formula. I can buy the gold standard formula where you can afford the no-name brand only. Do you understand? So those arguments of the mother and all that. But
would you concede, while we're in that place, in that space, that if a mother can argue that I am the best primary giver during those tender years, then yes, what did you call that principle?
The tender years and maternal preference.
Yes. Would you agree that maternal preference and tender years should then be leaning towards the mom?
What you're saying is, should that be the starting point of how we should think? Let's start there and then see if anything deviates. Almost like a red card in rugby. We'll start with a red card and then see if there's anything that mitigates, that moves us away from that. I don't agree, and neither does the law, but it's not implemented. The law quite clearly says the Children's Act, the yardstick, is the best interest of the child. Not the maternal preference, not the tender years. It's if you paint a day in the life of the child, which picture paints a better picture? The day in the life with the father or the day in the life with the mother? Now, my speciality is custody for fathers. Yes, I do custody battle for mothers too. And in relation to that is also disputed relocations, usually where the mother wants to move away with the children or one of the parents wants to move away with the children.
Yeah.
Usually the mother because she's the custodial parent. Usually. It's changing though, and I'm part of that battle to change it, just like those guys on hunger strike. But it says here in the Children's Act and in the Constitution, Section 28.2, that the yardstick is the best interest of the child, not the maternal preference. Not the tender years. It's who can provide the best. Emotional, psychological. It says materials shouldn't play a role, but it does. You mean public schools versus private schools, public hospitals versus private hospitals. Nobody can tell me that shouldn't play a role. Of course it does. You go to a public hospital, I'm sorry to say this, to die, where you go to a private hospital to get better. You see in the papers what is happening in a lot of public schools at the moment. I wouldn't want to send my children there. So those are all factors. And I can tell you now, and added to that, the changing role, and you've alluded to this, the changing roles of masculinity. I get upset when people talk about toxic masculinity. And I get upset because that's not how I see masculinity. A big part of masculinity, if you were raised properly as a male, a big part of that is nurturing, is kindness, is helping somebody in need. And what man would not help or look after their own children? What real man? And men are this whole movement across the world where you see these people going on a hunger strike, you see the fathers for justice, you see the fights that I'm fighting in court. The root of that is men refusing to be second-class citizens in the life of their children anymore. They are refusing to do that. They are saying, I'm going to be the father, not necessarily the father I had, but the father I deserve to have growing up. I'm going to be that guy. And that's the idea of masculinity. And to me, that is not toxic.
Sure. But I do imagine that you would agree that when there is a phenomenon of femicide by men, that would be toxic, right?
Absolutely. But look at this, Aubrey, if I can make a simple example.
I don't want us to digress, but yeah.
I have a car.
Yeah.
I can use that car to transport people to the hospital, or I can use that car to plow into a crowd of children. It's the same car, runs on gasoline. It's just how I tend to use it, which makes it a toxic object.
But we're not talking about the car. We're talking about the guy driving the car.
No. I'm just talking about there's this thing, masculinity.
Yes.
Masculinity can be used in the most gentle, beautiful.
So basically you're saying to me that masculinity is a vehicle, and it is the consciousness that uses the masculinity that we should be talking about, rather than the vehicle itself.
Yes, I would say yes, there are certain asymmetries. Yes, there are certain patriarchal aspects to masculinity. Absolutely, undeniable. But we are living the society, and Aubrey, we alluded to this earlier. Now I am digressing, even though you said you didn't want to digress. But men and women...
These things are related. They are all related.
Yeah. Men and women, the cruelty of life. Life is cruel and difficult. But men and women have been cooperating for centuries to raise children against and protect them against the cruelty of life, to build societies, successful societies. And this, I think it's pernicious and dangerous, the way men are being taught now that it's evil to be a man, that it's men versus women, that the history of the world is men dominating and oppressing women. That's pernicious and dangerous. The history of the world, if you look at it, is men and women cooperating against the cruelty of life to bring up children, to keep them safe, to make them grow into adults. And we now live, even though things look bad, we actually live in one of the most peaceful times in world history with the least patriarchal society, yet men are being vilified.
Again, that's not the conversation we're here for.
Sorry.
And you'll be invited
for
another conversation. I do want to hear more of your views on that. But let's go back to the issue of the fact that there is the experience by men. Whether the law wants to say that that's not in its intention or not, but there is an experience by men that when it comes to post-divorce settlements, particularly as it pertains to who has custody of children, men are experiencing a serious situation where they feel that they are unfairly treated because of those principles that you spoke about. What did you call
maternal preference and 10 years?
Right, because of those principles that are sort of a throwback from the way that we used to think. And I agree with you that it is perhaps arguable in this day and age that the nurturing nature is no longer the preserve only of women.
Men
can do that. Yeah.
And it's because of, and tying in with what I said previously, it ties on and it follows on. It's because a lot of times masculinity is seen as toxic, and that a man, cowboys don't cry, sort of attitude. And that therefore you cannot be a nurturer and you should not be a nurturer. And it ties in with the toxic view of masculinity, which is almost an archaic view of masculinity. You know, but men are being treated unfairly. May I just let people not think I'm completely pro-men. If we want to have a conversation about what happens in the maintenance court, there I would say women are being treated unfairly. So it's different. We're now having a discussion about custody and custody courts. There I would absolutely say men are being treated unfairly. And if I can give you an example, Section 21 of the Children's Act. That's for men and women who have children and they were not married. You can be a heroin addict mother, but if you gave birth to that child, you have automatic parental rights and responsibilities. You are the father, you're a taxpaying accountant. We have to go to court and prove your parental rights and responsibilities. Now, if that's not discrimination based on gender, I don't know what is.
Give us a call, 011-883-0702 or 021-446-0567. Is that your experience as a man post-divorce with regards to your rights for custody, your rights for responsibility, your rights for all of those things that are supposed to be found in the ambit of custody. Give me a call, 011-883-0702. There is a campaign at the moment called hashtag My Kids, My Responsibility. Some guys on a hunger strike because they believe that they have been discriminated against precisely because they are men, in the, I suppose, in the whole discussion around custody. Is that your experience? 011-883-0702-021-446-0567. I want to keep this principle in my mind. It's the what principle?
The maternal preference and yes. Tender years principles, doctrines which do not form, are not supposed to form part of a law anymore. The yardstick now is the best interest of the child.
What happens, Shando, if it can be argued that the best interests of a child at a particular time are best handled by the mother in this sense? That the mother has got the job, the father is not working. The mother has got the nanny. The father does not have the wherewithal to look after the child in that sense. The mother just has the resources. Would you be happy in that instance that the custody go to the mother?
I would be happy in that instance if that same yardstick applies to the father. What if the mother's unemployed and the father has the money? Mm. You never see it working the other way. Never. So if it's applied evenly, I don't care who gets the child as long as it's the best for the child. But here's the lazy thinking. It's like sort of a feedback loop that the courts have fallen into. And they confuse the maternal preference and the tender years principle with the child's best interest. They think automatically, if the child is young, the child must be with the mother. Doesn't matter if the mother's working. Doesn't matter if the mother's not working. But doesn't matter if the mother's working and the child is raised in a creche. The child could be raised in the same creche if the father was a custodial parent. But there's something else that ties in with that. It's almost very hard for the courts to make that leap that, let's say, custody follows maintenance. And you and I had a little chat about that off air. It's also very hard for the courts to order that women pay maintenance to men because the man is now the custodial parent.
Well, I was going to ask that.
That seems to be the further sort of mental block that they have. But what it comes down to lazy thinking. It comes down to lazy thinking because the courts assume, well, the child is young, and therefore the best interest of the child is that the child should stay with the mother, without drilling down into a day in the life and to see who can provide best, who's got the best support structure. There's a father, let's say both parents are working. There's a father, but the father has got his mother, which is the paternal grandmother of the child, staying at the house. Or maybe an aunt or somebody. So he has a support structure. So while he's out, the child is raised by a family member or the child attends a good creche. And should he get sick, there's a backup plan, there's good medical aid. Versus that, a mother who is transient in a job, transient in her life partners, every 3 weeks she has a different boyfriend. And that seems to matter not. I had a situation where in the same court, I had a mother who transgressed a parenting plan that said the court ordered that father will have the children every alternate weekend. They'll pick them up at school and in the non-alternate week it have sleepovers for the children. The mother transgressed that 163 times. No sanction. In the very same court, I had a matter where the father was made the custodial parent. He transgressed 3 times and he got into serious trouble.
011-883-0702. I'm going to take some of your calls. A very, very, very compelling argument made here by Shando Theron. We're talking about the law and how it should be exercised by our courts. And if you were listening to our conversation, we touched on some of the gender politics that we are dealing with in contemporary South Africa and I suppose the whole world. And I am wondering whether there is a separation of the law and the currents of contemporary politics. And it appears to me that you can't necessarily separate them, even though perhaps the ideal is to do so. It appears to me that in the world that we live in, it's very difficult to separate the direction of current contemporary politics about any matter and what the law says. Would you agree with that statement?
Unfortunately, if I look at our parliament, I don't want to agree with that statement and contemporary politics. But
well, you know what I mean? What I mean by contemporary politics, there is really a conversation at the moment that is about gender-based violence. And very, very often, and not always correctly, it does have the slant that men are the ones that must account, right? And the question that I'm asking is, are you suggesting that those kinds of politics have seeped into the way that the laws, which are supposed to be independent of those kinds of politics, are interpreted by our courts?
Well, I think it's very hard for us to ignore gender-based violence, and it's very hard. I think that possibly makes it harder for the courts to find in a man's favor, because here's this person that's capable of such heinous violence, a man. How can we now turn a young child over to that man? Surely that man will resort to their default position, which is this evil character that will eat his own young. I think that sort of narrative that's been pushed down our throat by various parties, for whatever reason, I think certainly makes it more difficult for the courts. And just because there is a lot of femicide and a lot of violence being committed by women, but a lot of these situations, let's drill down into them, right? And let's look at these family structures. Firstly, a lot of women are being killed by men. Right. There's an asymmetry there. Violence by women on men. But far more men are being killed by men. Okay, that no one talks about that. Far more men are in prison. Far more men die in wars.
Yeah, but that,
far
but
more
that,
men
but,
are out on the
but
street.
That, but that conversation is about death.
Yes.
And killings. The conversation about the relationship and the killings that happen as a result of femicide is about the relationship between men and women.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But also what comes into that is the relationship between men and violence.
Yes.
And what happens in society.
Yes.
Bad things happen to people of both sexes, to men and women, not just men dominating or men committing violence on women.
You're suggesting, Shando, because this is very important.
Yes.
So you're suggesting is that whole conversation around gender-based violence and the politics of gender in this country has somehow tainted, influenced, whatever side of the argument you fall in, has tainted or influenced the way that laws, which are supposed to be independent of those arguments and therefore produce a particular experience for men specifically.
Yes, I can say, and obviously I just have my gut feel to go on, I can certainly say it's played a role. What, you know, you just look at the papers and there a father has killed a family, has hanged a family, has done some heinous
stabbed things. A young girl 52 times.
Yes, so I don't see how you can be a judge or a magistrate and somewhere deep in your mind that headline doesn't stick with you.
Yeah.
Now there is a father who comes to court who says he wants to see his children. Now the mother says, yes, but 3 years ago he slapped me.
Mm.
So immediately there's that narrative of violence.
Sure.
And I'm saying it's probably impossible for that somehow not to play a role. What the level of that role is, I don't know.
Should it though? Should it play a role in the way the court interprets the law? And I know you'll give me the ideal answer and then give me the realistic answer.
I think I'll give you a bit of both. Should it play a role? I think it should. I think we should take cognizance of the society we live in, the violent society.
Yeah.
Should that override the facts of each matter? There's enough court cases that says each matter should be looked at on their facts. And let's come to those femicide cases. A lot of them involves alcohol and drugs. It's not just somebody that comes home and decides this is going to happen. There was a run-up to it. I'm not saying it. I'm not justifying it. But people are very blasé about it. There is a run-up to it. A lot of times the people, there's alcohol on both sides. There's violence on both sides. Femicide is a problem. But guess what? Murder is a bigger problem. And many more men are getting murdered by men. So, but femicide is absolutely a problem. One femicide is one femicide too much. But those headlines, I'm sure it affects the psyche of our society.
Yeah.
And judges and magistrates are as much a part of our society as anybody else. They are bombarded by those headlines too. Has it led to men being treated unfairly? I think in some sense it has trickled down, but I don't think that's the main factor. Mm. I think the main factor that's led to men being treated unfairly is the archaic view of masculinity and the institutional memory of the roles of men and women and the sort of John Wayne image of a man. Hard drinking, hard smoking, sort of fair guy, but you don't see him carrying a baby. That's just not right.
0118830702. I'm going to shut up. I'm going to allow you to speak to Shando. Very, very interesting points of view. But really my question to you as a man, are you experiencing the issues that Shando is highlighting? Are you feeling as though the law treats you like a second-class citizen as it pertains to custody of your children or just rights, visitation rights of your children? How can we improve the situation? We'll hear from Shando in a few moments' time, but lots of calls, Shando. Sheesh, good. Man.
It's a can of worms. But
it is a can of worms. All right, let's go. Let's open it up. I've never seen an attorney so passionate. Yeah, never seen.
That's what I live for, man.
So passionate. It's a thing. Let me speak to Itumeleng in Centurion. Hi, Itumeleng.
Thank you very much, Bro.
Yes.
For your guest as well.
Thank you, sir.
I think, you know, I just switched off the radio and I heard him speaking. He was speaking almost directly speaking to me. I think it's 101% spot on. In terms of the stigma that is being painted against men to say that all men are bad and all men do that, I don't think it's necessarily true. And I believe that as society, until we address the actual problem, we're not going to get resolve the GBV issues. We need to get to the actual track of the matter because this is, in my opinion, at least, I think it's a societal issue, and people just take it to men and push it to men, and they said it's all men problem. But men were raised by a woman somewhere. He came from somewhere and was groomed to be the way they are today. So in my opinion, this is a collective societal problem.
Sure. But I really do need to have your comment on the issue of access to children post-divorce in terms of custody and so forth. Yeah?
I'm currently going through a separation as well, experiencing difficulties.
Yeah.
I think as men, we need to maintain as much calmness as possible because you'll be pushed left, right, and center. And I'm struggling hard. I think Mr. Shando, I'd like to be in touch with him as well because I've been going through the court. She wanted
What happened in your case, Itumeleng? You are being refused access, custody of your child. What's the story?
In an actual fact, the mother of my kids, because of our previous records between myself and her,
yes,
was that she wanted to have a protection order against me so that I must not come closer to the kid. But it was ruled again. It didn't go according to,
yes,
to her favor.
Why? Why didn't you want you to have any access or proximity to the children?
Because she just, I think she's just angry at me. She don't want to be just because of myself and herself. We don't see eye to eye. She passed it on to the kids. And I said, that cannot be the fact that we have problems. But there's been activities that I've been doing with the kids. I've been on the weekends, I've been going to soccer, and all those things have been taken away. Like the gentleman explained earlier on, to say that now men will be given only 2 days. I think it's unfair. Mm-hmm. If this thing, why will you be given only a particular day? If on my case, I have flexibility of even taking them from school, and she's refusing that.
Let me stop there, my brother. Thank you very much. Let's hear what Shando has to say. And listen in for Shando's contact details before we end this hour of conversation. All right?
Thank you so much, bro. So hey. I think this gentleman is very spot on.
Itumeleng in Centurion. Yeah?
Itumeleng, I understand what you're going through. I deal with it every day. As a lot of people out there, unfortunately, the Domestic Violence Act is written, or where people get protection orders, is written very loosely. Even in relationships that work, at least 3 or 4 acts of domestic violence is committed every week. If you say to somebody, you swear at somebody because you lose their temper, that's an act of domestic violence. So the act is very loosely written, well-meaning, but it is probably the most misused piece of legislation. And a lot of times, as soon as somebody gets a bee in their bonnet about something, they go use the act to either have you thrown out of your property, but more often than not, to restrict your access to your children. That is what the act is a lot of times used for. Look, the act is also used to protect people in need, make no mistake. But a lot of times the act is misused to frustrate you from seeing your children, because they know that's where you're going to get hurt.
Tasneem is in Randburg. Hi, Tasneem.
Hi. First of all, I think it's really, really silly when two adults can't see eye to eye and use children as a date. Mm. I think it's really wrong.
Agreed.
I think we've got to be matured and we have to say what is in the best interest. I have met dads who are fantastic human beings, and sadly, the moms would restrict the visitation right, or maybe not even allowed or whatever. So as a woman, I'm completely against it, unless there's fundamental issues with the person itself. But that could go two ways, whether it's a male or a female.
Yeah.
So that's one. However, out of complete curiosity, I wanted to know what happens in the event of death when, say, a mom has a complete right over the kids and the dad has no right. But legally, the father is the guardian, so... And say the mom stipulates in the will clearly that she wants no, that this man must not have any access to the kids. How would the executives deal with this kind of situation?
Tasneem, if I can jump in there. Firstly, in a relationship, look, if the mother wants to, once again, what is the yardstick? The yardstick is the best interest of the child. Now, if there was two parents there, and for one parent to be restricted access, what is the best interest of the child? Well, I'd probably say there'd have to be some form of violence or addiction, or the person would have to be institutionalized, some sort of emotional, let's say they're not doing well emotionally, and that would happen via a protection order or via a parenting plan where the court, it's called Section 28, where the court restricts the parent's rights. But generally, if a parent's rights is restricted, it's restricted for a period of time. Let's say the person suffers from an addiction. Then the court would say to you, okay, right, you are now an alcoholic, it's proven, or a drug addict, but come with 6 months of clean tests to court, and then let's start reintroducing you to the children. And currently, you can see the children supervised, but you have to continue bringing clean reports. Now, if there's a will, for instance, which says the person is not allowed to have any contact with the children, that does not fall within the ambit of what an executor does. An executor wraps up an estate. Do you understand? The executor hasn't got powers over who the children may see and cannot see. Of course, if there's a court order that bars the father because of addiction or violence from seeing the children, well, then the executor can't really do anything. There's a court order that says that. But barring a court order, I don't see any executor having the right or the authority to restrict children's rights to have access with any parent.
All right. Merlin is in Craig Hall. Hi, Merlin.
Hi, guys. Thanks for being on the show.
Sure.
I have spoken to Shanda before. Hi, Shanda.
Hey, Merlin. How are you doing?
I'm experiencing good news, Shanda. I'm experiencing a very tough time with seeing my kids, where I was involved in their daily life for a year after separation and then divorce, where I actually looked after them on, you know, just what Shanda was saying. It's not always mothers that do the nurturing. I was doing a lot of nurturing as well. And the kids became very attached to me. And then we had an altercation. She took out a protection order and she used it to the nth degree to restrict my access to public places for a year. And it's been a very, very, very tough time where I've been unable to parent, even though I'm a fully capable parent. And I can definitely agree where sometimes things are taken out of context and then used to restrict your access to punish you. And I've experienced that for a year, and I'm obviously trying to resolve that at the moment.
Merlin and Craig Hall, thanks very much for sharing your experience with us. Rafael is in Pretoria. Hi, Rafael.
Good evening, morning, Raoul.
Yeah, how's it, man?
And the listeners.
Yeah, go for it.
I have a situation. A friend of mine, his wife got a protection order against him a few years ago, and she used it on two occasions where he was in prison for a week. The judge then released him on a few occasions, and more recently, she's now using this act to become vindictive and to get him thrown into jail for any reason she can, whether it's shouting, emotional abuse, or any other allegation she makes. In addition, she's also spreading news in the community which is false about him in order to disparage his character. What does this guy do in this case?
Okay, first thing that you need to do is, what would I do in a situation like that? Well, obviously, let's just take it on broad strokes on what you said. I would attack that protection order and I'd get it rescinded. I'd get it thrown out, because right now, that's what she's using as a power base. She's using or abusing that order given to her. So I would go to court and I'd say, listen, yeah, the following has happened. And I would then also take out a counter protection order against them. But before I do that, before I would do any of that, I would get the court to order both parties to go for mediation. Because the blood on the walls that you're seeing there is the blood of the children. Mm. Children have a right to their parents. And it makes me sick. Because the real person that's suffering here is not only your friend, but the children, if there are children involved here. So I would have the court, in terms of the Children's Act, you can actually go and you can have, in terms of section 46, I think it's, or 45, 6B, you can actually order parties, they must attend mediation. Now, I know mediation is supposed to be voluntary, but sometimes you must force people and just have them sit down and see if at the end of the mediation, we can just have it our hiatus where the protection order can be withdrawn.
Yeah, sometimes people can be encouraged to find some sort of calm so that they can speak rationally to each other. Let's speak to James in Midrand. Hi, James.
Hi. Look, I'd like to say that personally, I think you're seeing it from the mother's side and going, or from the father's side going, they're the victims. I'm on the other side of it. We've had an urgent court interdict, which we've had going on since 2017. The father's delayed everything. We've won the court case. We're now sitting in limbo because he thinks he's going to appeal it. And you can go, yeah, you can get the family advocates involved, the children's best interest. Nobody cares. It's 18 months. It goes on and on and on. Everything you're talking about is great. It's window dressing.
So what's your question?
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. You guys are sitting going, the fathers are in a bad position. I'm sitting in a position where the father is the guy who's delayed this, an urgent court interdict by 18 months, and shame, he's the victim.
Yeah,
that's
look.
The conversation we're having.
Yeah, look, James, obviously that's the other side of it too. Let's not go out and say that men are virtuous and without fault or blemish. I've had situations where, this is another conversation where let's talk about parental alienation, where one parent turned the children against the other parent. I've had situations, some of the worst parental alienation I've seen is actually where fathers have been made custodial parent and then they turn the children against the mother, where they specifically in the mother's contact time, they will arrange extramurals for the children or play dates or just openly frustrate the children and turn the children against the mother. So, James, trust me, the delay in the court process is a tactic used many, many, many times, but there are ways around that. Once again, you talk about an urgent court application. I mean, an urgent court application having gone on to 2017. I don't know what's happened with urgency there, but I agree with you. Both parties can equally make themselves guilty of the behavior that I'm talking about.
All right. Listen, a lot of people still wanting to talk about this and we've run out of time. I mean, so many people still wanting to talk about this. How do they get in touch with you, Shando?
Am I allowed to keep my cell phone?
Yeah, no way. Okay. Well, if you're willing to take the calls that are going to come,
I am willing to take the calls. Guys, try and WhatsApp me, please. I have a life too, but I'm going to give you my cell phone number and my email address, but WhatsApp me after hours. Call me during hours. If I'm in court, I can't take it, but it's 082-819-5675. Send me a WhatsApp or you can email me www.divlaw.com. www.co.za. And I see somebody's, I've already had two phone calls. Thank you. I'm on air, so I can't take them now.
Shenda Theron, attorney and matrimonial mediator.
That's the one.
At Father's Custody Right. Thank you very much for joining us. I really appreciate your
Anytime,
time.
Anytime, Aubrey.
We need to continue with this conversation.
I'm your man.
All right. Let's take a break. When we come back, Eyewitness News. We don't have one. Oh, okay. Sorry. All right. Then I can take one more call. Can I? Excellent. Oh, sorry. I thought I had another break. Linda is in Greenside. Hi, Linda.
Hi, Aubrey.
Yeah, go ahead.
Aubrey, I think we're missing the boat here. There's something called an ACE, which stands for Adverse Childhood Event or Experience. Any child in that fragile age, under the age of about 18, can have up to 10 ACEs. So sexual abuse, emotional abuse, and parents' alienation, there's literally 10 that are worldwide seen. Those change the structure of children's brains. They physically change it because these children are constantly in flight and fright. Attachment, which is what the gentleman spoke about earlier, can happen between a mother, a father. It doesn't matter as long as there's a good caregiver. If you've had 3 or more ACEs, you're going to do badly at school. You're going to be sexually active early. You're going to be involved in crime. You're going to be incarcerated. And the only way this can be salvaged is by us actually attaching correctly and allowing parents access to children, teaching them, mentoring them, and helping them. And you can't.
So where are we losing? Where are we missing the point, Linda? Sorry, I'm a little confused.
So Aubrey, anything that we do to these children, accusing them, alienating parents, that stresses that child beyond redemption.
Yeah,
agreed.
And that child, every time something happens, so verbal abuse, physical abuse, sexual abuse, neglect.
I'm sorry, Linda. I'm running out of time, but I really need you to clarify. So what has that got to do with custody?
We change these children's brains. And then what happens is these children become parents. This is how they've gone on. And it just gets worse and worse and worse.
Linda, in Greenside, I've got to stop you because we've got to take the news. You'll be back again to have this conversation. I hope Linda will call in when we have that conversation. Absolutely.